Hello everyone, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to the channel. Anyway, in this video I'm commenting about Rishi Sunak leaving the D-Day commemorations yesterday a bit early. So it really was an imbecilic decision. And why did he do it? To grant an interview to some TV journalist. And so that would gain him an infinitesimally small advantage in the election of an extra 10 minutes airtime. But the loss to his party and to his personal standing has been colossal. It wouldn't have taken much for him to hang around for another hour or two. So it was a grave error of judgment. And he quite often gets it wrong. And I know someone who met him through banking said he was always useless and failed upwards. I find that a bit hard to credit. You think that Goldman Sachs would be very unforgiving. And, you know, he's not a dimwit. You know, he got a double first in PP from Oxford and all the rest of it. And that MBA from Stanford, was it? But what about the people around him? What about his media team saying that this is a really bad look from a PR perspective? That it's just disrespectful. Remember, the Conservative and Unionist Party harps on about being more patriotic, having the Armed Forces Covenant, is strong on defence, and that is a major plank of the Conservative platform in this election. And then you let the veterans down. Sir Keir Starmer was still there speaking to them, and indeed speaking to Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. So it comes across as a kick in the teeth to these veterans, and they're not going to be alive in the next Jubilee year. Some are already over 100 that he departed early. So it was very injudicious to do so. And that is his Kinnock moment. Thinking back to the 1992 election, Neil Kinnock, leader of the Labour Party, with Labour a bit ahead in the polls, holding this high-octane rally in Sheffield, looked like Labour were going to win, and he arrived by helicopter, dramatically shown live in the main auditorium where thousands of Labour supporters were waiting. And then the shadow cabinet incoming one by one, Labour announced him as the governor waiting. And they said the next Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, and the next Transport Secretary, and the next Chancellor Exchequer, and so on. And then the next Prime Minister, Neil Kinnock. Okay, so it rose to a fever pitch, a crescendo of applause. And then he took to the podium and said, "We're all right. We're all right. We've got to get some talking done here." So he's punching the air, and this premature triumphalism turned people off. And that's one of the things that contributed to their defeat. As he said, it was only a few days before the actual ballots were cast. So people say it was too late to change many people's minds. He thinks it's a bit of a myth, but it did have some sort of impact. But one thing with Sunak is it's not too late to change people's minds, because it's about 4 weeks. It was 4 weeks to the day when he did that. And I can tell you it's very disorganized. I know someone who's chairman of a certain Conservative association said he is appalled by just the parlous state of disorganization that the party is in. I know people who volunteered to deliver leaflets, go canvassing, and nobody's ever got back to them. And it's not like that there's an influx of volunteers, because the Conservative Party claims to have 150,000 members. In reality, it's lower than that. And people are dying off. People aren't joining. Youngsters aren't joining. Or you can join at any age. But I mean, a lot of the members are very elderly, are not physically fit, or permanently wheelchair bound. So you know that they're really short staffed. It's going very badly indeed, I'm sorry to say. And just as he seemed to have a bit of a bounce, because he acquitted himself well in that debate, and you know, Sir Keir Starmer should take his advice from me. It was really a blunder for Starmer to agree to that. There was no need for him to do that. Oh, he's a coward. Well, I don't care. The prime ministers usually don't. Theresa May refused. Boris Johnson refused. David Cameron refused when he actually was prime minister. So just say no and get on campaigning, especially if you've got a massive lead in the polls. There was no gaining it for Starmer. There was for Sunak. Finally, a bit of a fillip to a Conservative morale, which up until that point had sunk down to Davy Jones's locker. And Sunak has blown it, and he's been lacerated by his own side. And then Penny Morden, when she had to speak against Angela Rayner and others in this secondary leaders debate, she found this indefensible, and even she publicly criticised him. So much for collective ministerial responsibility and all singing from the same hymn sheet. And it's been an open goal for people like Reform UK. They've absolutely lacerated Rishi Sunak over this. So I mean, it might seem like a relatively small error. I mean, I think when he did it wasn't even that bad. because the ceremony was over and so on. But there are other people who will exploit this and be rather opportunist of them, somewhat making a mountain out of a molehill, but just don't hand ammunition to your enemy like that. So the Conservative campaign is going quite badly. But what are the themes they're harping on about, saying that the Conservatives have a plan, they're sticking to the plan? Well, that's not really the case, because they know that the Rwanda plan is not going ahead. All right, the illegal crossings by boat have gone down 36%, saying that the National Health Service waiting lists have started to come down. All right, but there's a very long way to go. And some of this is attributable to coronavirus. That's true. The Conservatives have costed savings plans, spending plans, and Labour's got a £38.5 billion black hole. Say it's going to cost the average working family over £2,000. Now, I know that datum is hotly disputed. I don't know what the true datum is, but I mean, almost certainly Labour's going to cost people something, and Labour not being honest about that. Will you tax this? Will you tax that? They pointedly don't say no, but they don't want to fright the horses by saying yes. They remember 1992, Labour's tax bombshell, and that's one of the things that made people vote Conservative through gritted teeth. I even read about a Labour supporter went in to cast a ballot, and in the secrets of the ballot box, she couldn't bring herself to vote for higher taxation. She voted Conservative after all. But, you know, this party of low tax is not very credible. The Conservatives raised tax quite a lot, the highest level since 1952. Admittedly, it has come down a little bit now. And I know there were extraordinary circumstances with coronavirus and the Ukraine war and so forth. But there's an awful lot of waste. There are millions of economically inactive adults, millions. I don't just mean pensioners. There's hardly any unemployed people who are so-called too sick, disabled, unable to work. But, you know, blind people work full-time. I have a friend who's permanently wheelchair-bound since birth. He works full-time. I know a guy with only one hand who's a chef who works full-time. Also, physically disabled people, mentally disabled people work full-time. But let's be frank, there are a lot of scroungers, a lot of chancers that everybody else has to pay for. So it's really disgraceful. And this has been on the Conservatives' watch. So Conservatives haven't been right-wing enough on benefits. And there are too many people who are practicing social parasitism. There are too many benefit scum living like that. And I'll say it again, benefit scum. I don't mean pensioners. I don't mean people who are genuinely disabled. And all right, there should be child benefit. But, you know, little or nothing else. Universal credit. We have so many job vacancies. No job seekers allowance. No universal credit. Get out there. Get a job. When I'm unemployed, I get a job, right? I never claimed it in my life. I've been unemployed several times. Get a job, earn a living. Yeah, that's your problem. And then we'll cut tax for working people. So yeah, it's not been a very effective campaign. These are the themes they're harping on about. What do you think? Has Starmer run a decent campaign or not? Starmer's going to be in charge. They try and say they don't say coalition of chaos, because it's quite obvious that that Labour's going to win on their own. There'll be single party government. They say that they don't want you to know, I mean, how much it's going to cost. So they're going to harp on and on and on about this, and that they will deliver for pensioners because they're relying on older people to vote for them. And they really don't have much to run on, that we'll do this and we'll do that. We've had 14 years to sort it out, Conservative Party. So this just confirms how much Labour's going to win by. You know, people say a defeat on the scale of 1997. A defeat on the scale of 1997 for the Conservative Party would be a triumph in relation to how things are looking at the moment. It's definitely going to be worse than 1997 in terms of share of the vote, in terms of number of seats, because that was 31% of the vote, 166 MPs. So now, I mean, my previous prediction, I have to think about this properly, the forecast is going to go down. I said 28%, it's going to be down something like 27%, and the number of seats is going to be down like 130 seats, something like that. It's going to be horrific, as bad as 1906 in terms of number of members of parliament. So there are worse defeats than God knows when in terms of share of the vote. In the 20th century, never got under 31% of the vote. Labour's worst defeat since the Second World War was 27% of the vote. Labour looked like they might be up there with their 1945 result, like 48% of the vote. I don't think it'll be that high. It'd be more like 42% of the vote, not quite as high as Boris Johnson got last time. Right. Thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Make sure you donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye, everybody.